So as I mentioned at the beginning, these are four principles over the next 4 weeks that as I go through the parenting content, I need to be reminded that I need to take these into account as I talk to my children. Now, if there's any of you in the room that don't have children, and from the perspective of either you're an empty nester and your children are gone, thank you for being here, and I would really encourage you to come through the entire series because we need you to impart wisdom to us, myself included. We need to hear from older parents that have already been there, done that, and we need to hear about the wins and losses. For any of you, you've heard Greg's story before. Some of you know Bridget and I had trouble initially conceiving. We had a miscarriage. Some of you might be at that spot. It's difficult talking about parenting, and we really debated on whether or not we were going to enter into this realm in Homefront, but we think it's really important because it affects so many parentings and, frankly, parents in here. And frankly, when you enter the parenting stage, it so drastically changes your relationship that we can't not talk about it. So that's why we're entering into this. But I think it suffice to say, all of us have influence in some area on children, whether it's a niece or a nephew, whether or not it's someone in your family, someone in your neighborhood. We have influence on children. And these principles, albeit they are applied differently if you are a parent, that's for sure, but you have influence on children, and these principles apply no matter what type of influence you have on children because it's about how you interact with them. So that's what we're going to talk about for the next 4 weeks. This past 2 weeks, I don't know if you guys know this, but after Homefront, we jumped in the Getz family wagon and went on a road trip. And we've been gone, and we got back last night. So I haven't seen you guys about as much as I've seen my own house in the last 2 weeks because we left right after Homefront. Liam's our 14-year-old. He's our oldest. He designed our vacation this year. So we went on this massive, for you guys, up to New York, down to see Niagara Falls, over to Erie, Pennsylvania, to Cleveland, to Sandusky, to Cedar Point, down to Pittsburgh to a water park home. So it was like this massive, and if you know my Liam.
14-year-old planned it.
Yeah, you could tell. If you know my Liam, it's perfect, right? It was fast and furious. It was like, Dad, set up the tent over here, take it down. Dad, set up the tent over there. It was crazy. But when we were in Erie, we actually visited with my best friend from childhood. So Ben Davis and I grew up right at the opposite ends of the street, and Ben and I were best friends since we were 2 years old. And we grew up, and as we're in the car, we had a lot of time in the car over the last 2 weeks. I was sharing with the kids stories about me and Ben and the things we used to do and the trouble we used to get into. Well, one of Ben's favorite things to play with were fireworks. So every year in Pennsylvania, when we were kids, you couldn't buy fireworks. It was illegal in the state. So you actually had to cross state lines, pick up your fireworks, and then smuggle them into Pennsylvania. So Ben used to smuggle one of these guys, like the big, huge packages of all these assortments of fireworks, into Pennsylvania each year, and we would have this massive fireworks display, and it was really fun. Well, Ben did that year after year after year, and he brought in these fireworks, and one year we were getting kind of bored with it because, you know, you would read, okay, launches up into the air, explodes, spins around really fast, launches, sparks, explodes. You know, we'd read all the directions. We'd know exactly what each of the fireworks were going to do. So we got bored one year, and we decided to experiment, as young boys would tend to do. So we got a toilet paper container, you know, one of those little, you know, what are those called? Tube, thank you, a toilet paper tube. We got a toilet paper tube, and we put foil on the one end, and we sealed it, and then we just started opening up fireworks and dumping them into this toilet paper tube. So we dumped everything from straight up M80s, to rockets. We just start dumping it into this. And so we fill up this entire toilet paper tube full of gunpowder. And then we seal the other end and we cut a little hole in it. We put a wick in it. We seal the wick and we're ready to launch this thing off. So some of you guys know, if you're not familiar with fireworks, every firework is designed to do something special. So some fireworks spin up in the air. Some fireworks will hover around the ground. Some will go way up high in the sky. Some will explode at different altitudes. Some just explode. Some smoke. Some fizz. Whatever. They do all sorts of things. But we just combined all of that. We thought, awesome. We're going to light this thing on fire. We have no idea what it's going to do because keep in mind that when you have a rocket, it's got little, and those of you guys that are much smarter than me, you know, like wings and stuff, and there's things on the rocket that make it go straight. But we just had a toilet paper tube, no wings on it, no anything. So we had no idea where this thing was going to go. And so we get this all ready, and we light it, and it kind of rumbled for a little while, shot up in the air, then shot towards us, and then blew up. This big thing, big explosion. And it actually wasn't cool to watch at all, but it was incredibly scary. And it was a rush because we were hiding behind bushes because we didn't know where this thing was going to go. We didn't know if it was going to end up in the neighbor's yard. We mixed all these fireworks together. We didn't have any sort of a plan whatsoever of what was going to happen. And we didn't treat them as they should have been treated because each firework is designed to function in a certain way. And as parents, we tend to enter this realm too, of not paying attention to one child needs to be treated a little bit differently than another child, treated differently than another child. And I'm not saying this with respect to, I'm not saying that you should have this fluctuating parenting strategy where everyone gets disciplined, parented differently. You should have a plan for your parenting. What I'm saying is, as your children grow older, they need to be treated differently. Just like different fireworks need to be treated differently. And it's not a good idea just to mix them all together and say one plan fits all, one toilet paper tube for all. Not a good idea. When you're parenting, you need to consider the same principle. So as we launch into parenting, we're going to look at one of the most popular parenting verses out there. Train up a child in the way that he should go, says the proverb. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child in the way that he should go. So what exactly, it's so vague. We drop that verse. What does it mean? What does it mean to train a child up in the way they should go? Well, Ephesians sheds a little bit more light on this. So again, a holistic parenting verse, one that covers all children, all parents, all families, all the time. Ephesians tells us, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. So let's break apart this verse for a few minutes. We're going to kind of skip over the first part. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. That means don't frustrate your children. Don't get them angry. Don't get them frustrated. How do you frustrate your children? Well, you frustrate your children by saying that they can't do something one day and then changing it. You frustrate your children by treating one child differently than the other, playing favorites. That's very frustrating for a child. You frustrate a child by punishing them sometimes when they do something, but not punishing them other times when they do the same exact thing. So it's like a crapshoot for them. They don't know if they're going to do something, if they're going to get punished or not. That's frustrating. There's lots of ways that we can frustrate our children. And it's saying, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Do not frustrate them. But we're going to focus on this part. But bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Bring them up literally means to rear, to raise, to prepare, to get them ready for what's next. So when we look back at the Proverbs, train our child up in the way they should go, it's saying the same thing. We need to prepare our children for what they're about to see and encounter in life. Prepare them from the real world. We're going to bring them up. How are we going to bring them up? We're going to bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord, the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Now, you guys know that I'm not a theologian. If you look back in the Greek, which I don't do often, but if you look back in the Greek to the meanings of these words, because I wanted to kind of unpack this a little bit, discipline actually means to train, to prepare, the outside. It's very externally focused. It's focused on the actions. So when we're to bring them up in the discipline, we're supposed to bring them up in the actions. But this word discipline also has the same root as disciple. When you disciple someone, when you're discipling, when you're mentoring someone in the faith, in the way of the Lord, you're preparing them based on your understanding of the scripture. You're training them. You're walking with them through it. So discipline is very focused on the external part of the child, the external components of the child. And instruction, the Greek here actually literally means to press upon the mind. To press upon the mind. Instruction has to do with the intellectual side. It has to do with the understanding, the knowledge, to press upon a child's mind. So you see here that it's really beautiful how our author has laid this out for us because we're supposed to bring them up in the discipline, the external, and instruction internal of the Lord. Those are the two components of parenting. So however old your child is, whether I hear someone cooing, where was someone cooing? Cooing little infant. Whether you're a cooing little infant to the time you're 5 years old, to the time you're 5 years old and you're getting ready to enter school, to the time you're 9 years old and you're getting ready to enter junior high, to the time you're 14 years old, like Liam, about to be a freshman, to the time you're 18, our role as parents does not change. We are supposed to bring our children up in the discipline, the external, the what to do, and instruction, the internal, the why we do it, what and why, of the Lord. That's the big picture. But what does change is how we implement that. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. And some of you have seen me use this chart before. But again, I remind you, I forget this. Maybe you're a lot smarter than me and you have this locked into your mind and you never forget. But I forget that children change. When I see some of your children, I see the Cassidus children, I'm like, man, Rebecca is getting older. Like, what happened to the little girl? Like, holy smokes. And Pat says that about my children. I don't see it as much because the little day-to-day change, you don't notice as much as when you see it in someone else's children. And it's like, what happened to the time? But our children are growing and they are changing. So let's map out, and this is where the math dork in me comes out. So hold on for those of you that aren't like math-minded. I love graphs. I love to graph everything. I love everything in a spreadsheet. I'm just really weird like that. But we're going to graph and map out this verse. And this is thanks to Growing Children God's Way, written by the Ezos many years ago, but it's a good parenting book. And this is one of the pieces that I've grabbed out of there and implemented with my own children. This verse tells us to bring our children up in the discipline and instruction in the Lord. If this is parenting, if this box represents parenting, we have two parts to parenting: discipline, and we have instruction. And throughout our walk as parents, we're always going to be disciplining and instructing. But as children get older, this picture changes. So if here we have zero, fresh out of the womb, cooing, all of that good stuff, and here we have 18-ish, there are distinct parenting phases that we need to pay attention to. And the distinct parenting phases map to the ages of our children. And I'm going to use these as some benchmarks. Side note, some of you are like, oh, if you paid attention to the marketing at RBC, side note, our classes map to the phases of parenting. Because we don't expect to teach you something when you are the father or the mother of an infant and you remember it when they're 15. That would be an incredible memory. So we have parenting classes that map to the phases. So you can say, I'm about to enter this phase. Maybe I should think about taking this parenting class that specifically addresses the complications, the issues, what we're about to enter into with this phase. That was my little side pitch, sales pitch. Okay. Children. They age from 0 to 18. I leave a little space here at the end, post 18, because parenting doesn't end. Parenting, and for those of you that are empty nesters, you know this. Parenting does not end. It continues on even after the children leave your house. Distinct phases, 0 to 6, 6. And this isn't like, oh, you've turned 6, so now we are going to change our parenting strategy. This is 6-ish. 5, 6, 7, depending on how your child develops. This isn't 13s. I use that as a benchmark because it is when they become teens, but it's also when they change physically in a lot of ways. They're either in the midst of that or maybe starting around that age, 12, some as early as 10 or 11, 12, 13, big changes occur. It's also a big change in schooling because you're entering into, you're in junior high, which is a very unique animal, and you're getting prepared for senior high. So that's a parenting stage, 6 to 13. And then finally, parenting in the teen years. So what does discipline and instruction look like from 0 to 18? Well, it changes. And if I were to map it out, it's not a straight line because it's not perfectly straight across the board, but there is a divide between discipline and instruction. You're always doing both, but at any particular time in parenting, the mix between discipline and instruction is going to change. So if we took a slice and we looked at the two-year-old, the age of two, wonderful two. As you look at the age of the wonderful two, what does your parenting look like? Is it mostly instruction or is it mostly discipline? What's that? Thank you. Discipline. Okay, and I don't need to spell this out for you. You know this, right? You're like the no button. No, 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 no. Don't touch that. Don't go near that. Come over here. Go over there. Go to your room. Come from your room. Come to the kitchen. Go to the kitchen. I mean, that's what you, it's constantly, you're disciplining your child. No, no, no. We know that, and again, for those of you guys that are in this stage, you know that 0 to 6 is a very, very physical part of the parenting process. It's a very physical, moms, nod your heads, okay? It's a very physical part. There's very little sleep. We're up in the middle of the night. They're crying all the time. We can't even brush our teeth. We can't even comb our hair. It's so crazy busy. It's a very physical, hands-on period of parenting. We know this. There is much discipline. There is much training of the external. Do these things. Don't do these things. You should be doing these things. There's a lot of that. Don't touch this. Touch this. Tuck in your, whatever. It's over and over again. There's a lot of discipline. There's very little instruction. There's very little pressing upon the mind. This is not a trick question. Why is there very little pressing upon the mind? Because there's not much mind. Thank you. They are little people with little brains. Seriously, from a developmental perspective, they have no understanding of consequences, if this, then that. They're very, in the age of two, before the age of two. There's very little understanding. You can't explain a lot. I can't explain a lot to you, right? I can't. You wouldn't understand. You don't even know what that phone does that you're holding. Do you know how much that phone costs? You can't. They don't understand it. There's very little instruction at that stage. They're cute as can be. I mean, goodness. And you love, yeah, sometimes that keeps them alive that they're cute. Otherwise, I don't know. It's the old, I brought you into this world and I'll take you out. Thank you, Bill Cosby. But it's a very physical parenting stage, and there's a lot of discipline up until around the age of 6-ish. Around the age of 6-ish, 5, 6, 7, it changes, and you have a mix of you're still correcting, you're still telling them what to do, how to do it, but there's more of an understanding of why. There's more of a balance between the what to do and the why. Again, if we would call discipline the what, we would call instruction the why. Frankly, if you're talking a lot during this stage and explaining a lot of things, your words are falling on deaf ears. There's just not a lot of instruction because they just don't understand, and it's not a knock on them. We were the same age, same way when we were that age. It's just part of the physical development process. Cognitively, they are not able to process the why at that age. But as children get older, they enter into this oh-so-critical middle period where there's a balance between discipline. You're still correcting them, and parents of elementary school kids nod with me. Yes, we're still correcting them. There's a lot of telling them what to do, when they can do it. There are boundaries. There's structure around our parenting. But we start to, at the early part of this stage, tell them why, and they're starting to understand why. And you literally, literally see these little tiny light bulbs go off on top of their heads. Like, don't touch the hot stove, don't touch the hot stove. And now they understand why you don't touch the hot stove, because they see their little sibling do it. And they're like, oh, that's why you always said, don't touch the hot stove. Now I get it. And they start to connect the what with the why. This parenting stage is critical because it's the first time that you get to talk. If you get stuck in this parenting stage of just telling them what to do, when you enter into this parenting stage, you're not communicating the way that you should be communicating. Finally, I'm just going to give you a high level, and then we're going to describe these. The third parenting stage, parenting teens. You see that there's very little discipline. Yes, can you take away the car keys? Absolutely. Can there be a grounding? Absolutely. Can you take away privileges? Are they still within your home? Are they still under your authority? Absolutely. But there's far less. But there's much more instruction. And if you do this right, and you do this right, and God blesses your efforts, I add that because it is possible that you can't, there's a percentage of a child that is nature, and there's a percentage that is nurture. Jason's belief, it's about 70-30, nature versus nurture. In other words, the way they come out of the womb, their DNA, and the environment in which they're raised. So sometimes you just can't overcome some of the nature, some of the DNA of a child. A difficult child, we have a couple difficult kids, and they're always going to be difficult kids. More difficult than others. They're not as compliant as others. That's just the way they are. We can't change that, but we can adjust our parenting to it. So Lord willing, and if you do it right in the early stages, when you come to hear the instruction, the talking, the knowledge transfer, the wisdom transfer from the Lord, that's the instruction of the Lord, comes a lot easier because your children have a relationship with you. You have a question, Mike? What's that? Oh, 70-30. I personally believe that it's 70 nature, 30 nurture. In other words, 70% of a child, 70% of a child is just their DNA. 30 is a big number, though. I mean, that's the difference between a C minus and an A. But you can't. You know, a child out of the womb is going to have their disposition. They're going to have their disposition, and that's just the way they are. But you still have control over that 30%, so we'll talk about that. I can't remember if it's next week or the week after, but we'll talk about that 30%. Okay. What we're doing is taking them on a journey that goes from here to here. This is the timeline. 0 to their 18. The role that you play during these periods is different. So this is the parenting stage, which matches that corresponds to the age of the children. The first, 0 to 6, your role, this is the parent's role. The first is you are the enforcer. You could call it dictator. I think that's a little harsh, but I mean, it is your world. You are the enforcer. You are telling them what to do, how to do it, when to do it. You are the enforcer. You have much influence over your children when they're young because you are their parents. We talk about in 201, I don't want to go too much into the weeds, but you are the enforcer because God made you the enforcer. That's the key. That's all built on this foundation, which I'm not getting into today. But God puts you, not because you're bigger, smarter, faster, stronger. You are the authority in the home because God made you the authority within the home. So during this stage, you need to recognize what your authority is and exercise your authority, not in a dictator sort of way, but in a healthy, I'm preparing a child in the way they should go in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So during this stage, you are the enforcer. During this stage, you are more of a trainer. During the ages of, again, 6-ish to 13-ish, you are more of a trainer. How many of you guys have ever used a personal trainer at the gym? Excellent, excellent. By the way, there's no clock back there. I guess I'll have to look at my watch. I'm so used to looking back there. Okay, I don't want to run too long.
You have 1 minute.
Thanks, Brad. During this stage, you are the trainer. You come alongside the child. You're still actively involved in their in their development, in their coming up, in their raising. There is a physical part to it, and you guys know this. When your children are in elementary school, you'll still have a sleepless night here or there. They'll have bad dreams. You still have to do certain things for them, because particularly in kindergarten, first, second grade, they still can't do them for themselves. But this period, there's huge leaps and bounds that take place in terms of their development. From the time that they are a kindergartner around that age to the time that they're a junior higher. Huge leaps and bounds. But you are a trainer. You are coming alongside of them. When you're at the gym and you put 225 on the rack and you lift it off and you bring it down to your chest, the trainer doesn't say, okay, I'm going to go grab a coffee. I'll be right back. The trainer does not do that. The trainer is right there, and he'll come down and lift it off your chest and put it back on the rack if you get stuck. Even if you're having trouble getting it up, he's like, come on, come on. He is your champion. He's your cheerleader. Come on, you can do this. And during this stage, you are, come on, you can do this. Come on. We talked about what to do, and now I know you know that you can do this. Do you understand the why? No. Okay, let's talk about it. But come on, you can do this. You're a cheerleader. You're a trainer. You are there. But it's still very, very hands-on. During this stage, you are a coach. And this scares the pants off of some of you guys, and I understand that. And I'm in this stage. But you have to let go. Because now you're on the sideline. You still have some time during practice. You have a lot of hours in your house at home. But come game day, come the weekend, your kids are going to start to go out with their friends. And you are a coach. You are not in the game. If he gets hit by an outside linebacker blitzing around the end in his blind side, he may come over to you and say, Coach, what happened? What happened? We never talked about this. Maybe we missed it when we were training. What's going on? Can you help me understand this situation? I was out at a party. I got offered drugs. I was out at a party. A girl, a guy put the moves on me. What do I do? How do I respond to that? But you are not there. The coach is not there. And as much as the coach wants to run into the game and hit that outside linebacker back on behalf of his player, you can't do it. You can't do it. You can't enter the game because you're on the sideline. But Lord willing, when we establish the relationship early on, the player will come back and ask you, can you send in the play, tell him what to do, and he still causes, sorry for the football analogies, guys, I'm up sports, that's, sorry. But you can train and you can prepare, you can call in the play, and guess what? The quarterback can stand there and still call an audible at the line. He can change the play. He doesn't have to run the play that you've told him, and there's nothing that you can do about it except sit and watch. You might go, told you so, which I wouldn't recommend, but you know, I knew that one wasn't going to work. But he's going to call, he or she is going to call some audibles. They're going to make some decisions in the game that are outside of your control. And if the relationship is there, hopefully they will come back and talk to you about it after. They will talk to you about it after. When we are parenting, we need to remember that there are different stages. And the key for us is to match the stage to the age. Match the stage to the age. Because just like mixing all those fireworks together and it becoming a disaster, when you get into a rut of parenting in the same stage, or if you're parenting in a stage, if you're expecting your two-year-old to behave like an eight-year-old and you're not parenting to that stage, it makes a mess and you never know what's going to happen and it might just blow up. If you have multiple children, someone told Bridget and I, actually I'll share with you, Bob Shull, who is our senior high youth pastor. When I first started having kids, I said, Bob, would you mentor me? Because now I think we were going from 3 to 4 at the time. I said, Bob, would you mentor me? I just saw him one day and I said, can we just meet for lunch every once in a while so I can ask you questions about this parenting stuff? And he said, Jason, you're about to enter the most difficult aspect of parenting for you, for your particular family. And I said, how's that? And he said, because you're going to be straddling multiple stages at the same time. And what happens when you straddle multiple stages? Last night, So we get back from vacation, and Liam, we're all tired, we're crushed. It was a whirlwind rock star tour. We get back, we're unpacking, and Dad says, you know, we're just all gonna chill tonight. I forget that I have a 14-year-old. He's like, Dad, I just got back. I've been gone for 2 weeks. I wanna see my friends. What I do sometimes, what I have to catch myself with, is that I have children that spread from here to here. So what do? I plant myself in the middle. So I start treating my 2-year-old like I treat my 8-year-old, and I start treating my 14-year-old like I treat my 8-year-old. And I can't do that. I need to pay attention to the stage that I'm in and match it up with the age. So I had to go back. Liam and I had a little intense moment of fellowship. And at which point I stormed inside the house and he went to his room, and I had to think about it, and I had to say, go back to him and say, Liam, you know what? You're right. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. I thought about what you said. I didn't handle it well outside, but you're right. You need to go out and see your friends and spend time with your friends. And he was like, really? I was right? And I said, yes, you were right. You were right. Because I incorrectly position myself in the middle. You have to pay attention to where your kids are so that you can map where you are. Match the stage to the age. Let me pray for us. Father, thanks for this time just to get together and to laugh and look at parenting. Father, it is a blessing from you to have children, and we are grateful for it. Lord, would you help us to match the stage with the age, Lord? Our children are at different points, and we need to be cognizant of that. And Lord, we need to parent according to that. So give us the wisdom to do that well. Help us to see the errors of our ways if we're not, so that we can bring our children up in the way that they should go, to bring glory and honor to you. Father, we pray these things in the matchless name of your Son, Jesus. Amen.